So today, from the second canto, ninth chapter, we have the two concluding chapter Sloki Bhagavatams. I just want to say one thing before we see if I can do this. No, turn this off and then while I move this around. You recall the first text spoke about the Lord being aham in three places, before, during, and after, right? And you marked how the Prophet has some remarks in the purport. This, by the way, establishes the transcendental nature of the Lord. The Prabhupada talks in the purport about how the Mayavadis misinterpret this text. Even though aham happens to be a personal pronoun, you wonder how they get to an impersonal conclusion. But it seems the way they do it is when he says, I alone, or I only, they mean to say, that what it says is during, before, during, and after, there is nothing but me. And they take this to mean that there's nothing else. And therefore, for example, no other people, no other thing, no environment. You see, now once there's no environment, then to them speaking in, you have no borders or no boundaries, and therefore the I disappears into the oneness, and then they negate the I. But what we have to understand what the Lord does with his energies is he has, because you're a person, you have to, and to be a person, remember we talked about have senses. To have senses implies there's something that you sense. To be a person means you have relationships with other people, so there has to be an environment, right? So where is the environment? Well, it is Krishna in another form. So Krishna, through his energies, provides his own environment, and that's Krishna in another form. So simultaneously, he is one without a second, and at the same time, he is at the center of all his energies, and he is also in relationship with others. So this is, and that begins to be described in the other verses. How the verse today, how he pulls this one off. Right? But that's how they get to this conclusion. They think of I as an entity in total isolation. There's nothing else. And then, if there's absolutely nothing else, no boundaries, no borders, no environment, then there's no longer an individual or a person, and then everything dissolves into nothingness, and so that the word I literally has no reference anymore. That's what they do. Then the other thing, I just wanted to show you. The next verse, Ritirtam Yakratiyeta, this one is a little... I know that. I'm just getting this my little thing up here. Where is it here? Yeah. I've paraphrased this, made a paraphrase of this verse, because here's a paraphrase of this. What is really real disappears from our view, and that is darkness. If we look at the, I'll have to get the text up here for a minute. Yeah, here we go. The second line, na pratyeta cha atmani. What that really says, what is substantial and solid, atmani, you don't not pratyeka, it's not apparent to us. So what is really real, that we don't perceive, and that is darkness, yata tamaha. Right? And then the second, what then appears to us as if it were real or valuable or meaningful, is the first line, is actually not so. As this line says, yeah. Ritter artam ya pratyam. What is seen, what is perceived to be, is as if it were real or valuable or important as some artha. It's actually without artha. Artha means, you know, truth, value, importance, and so on. It's not so. So what then appears to us as if it were real or valuable or meaningful is actually not so. It is a false light. And that is the faint reflection of the real in the darkness. Yata abhasa, that's the abhasa, yata atamaha. Both the darkness and the reflections are the products of the Lord's maya. So you see how Prabhupada gets his translation by sort of combining these two senses together into a single idea. Whatever appears to be of value, if it is without relation to me, therefore he's not visible, has no reality. Though it is my illusory energy, the reflection which appears to be in darkness. Okay, so anyway, this is the paraphrase for that. Now if we go on to the next verse. This yata mahanti bhutani bhuteshu uchavateshu anu pravistani apravistani tatateshu nateshvaham. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created and at the same time I am outside of everything. This verse is really an explanation of the relationship between the Lord and the energies, achinja veda veda tattva, which Prabhupada has really already discussed in some of the earlier verses that we've seen leading up to this one, pretty thoroughly. But here when it says the universe of elements, these are the great elements, huh? They're called pancha mahabhuta, the five gross elements. The mahabhuta are here, they're earth, water, fire, air, and ether. But that's the Sanskrit, that's what he's talking about. They enter into the bodies of all manifested entities. What ucha and avachesha means, from the greatest to the smallest, from the highest to the lowest, means everywhere, everyone. So they enter into the bodies of everyone, from top to bottom, from left to right, and so on, all directions. And at the same time, they're outside, because the five shells of the universe are composed of these elements in their kind of causal form. Once they come down here, they're mixed with other things, and we don't see them in their really their pure form. But in their pure form, there's seven layers of the universe, and the first is earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and each one 10 times bigger than the one. Of course, there's a lot out there. You know, if you calculate the thickness of these seven layers, because the first one is 10 times the diameter of the universe, and one is 10 times that, the universe is like a little hole, and it's almost all shell. And the universe, in the sense that the space inside, it's very tiny. So those elements are all outside, and then they also appear inside in a different way. Huh?
And can you define what's ether?
Space.
Space.
It's just space.
What are the extra two elements besides five? What are the extra two elements besides five?
Oh, the layers? I don't know what they're. What are the next two, the final two layers? Earth, water, fire, air, ether, and then I think it's Ahankar and Mahatattva. I'm not quite sure. Prabhupada, he in the second canto, a couple of times, sometimes he says the first layer is water, and he gives different things. But it's confusing. But a little later on, it's pretty consistently earth, water, fire, air, ether, and then there's two more. And I didn't have time to look up what those last two really are. But someplace I've seen Ahankara, Mahatattva, and there may be other accounts too. The other reason is that maybe people say different for different things, and it may be it's not all the same in every universe too. So.
Yeah, he gives here Prabhupada 3:26:52. He skips but water, air, fire, sky. He skips earth. He's ego and Mahatattva.
Yeah, he says that's where I get that from. Then.
He only has six here.
Yeah, because he skipped earth. But he has Ahankara and Mahatattva.
How does anybody pierce it?
Huh?
How does anybody pierce it?
If you're Krishna with Arjuna, you get on a chariot and you go through. But according to the Brihad Bhagavatam reader, these are inhabited regions. And there's all kinds of things going on there. But we won't discuss that now. Because what's his name? Gopakumar, he traveled to the universe. He visits them. And what goes on in there? What's the matter?
I don't know.
What's the matter, Comrade Prabhu? Just when you think it's as far out as it gets, it turns out to be further out. Okay. Anyway, so it's a very simple thing. They're out there and they're inside. CC, Prabhupada just says it's like space is outside your body and space is inside your body. You know, it's not really a complicated understanding here about these. And really, Prabhupada, the elements are created first and then they enter later. That's why the word in the text, anu is there, after. They entered after, which implies before they were outside and then later inside. And then Prabhupada, he takes this off in a different direction now and doesn't really talk so much about the relationship anymore, but continues on the theme from the previous verses of the mystery, Bhushyam and Rahasya. The mystery, we had a big discussion, remember, about the meaning of the word mystery. We showed you from the Oxford English Dictionary the original meaning of the word mystery, which, by the way, I'm sure Prabhupada was aware of. Prabhupada had essentially a 19th century English education. In those days, they knew this stuff. That the original Greek root of the meaning of the word mystery are certain secret religious rituals which only the initiated are admitted to and others are kept out. Part of the sense of the word mystery, the other part is some spiritual truth which is very hard to understand and cannot be comprehended by everybody. And so Prabhupada uses this word mystery a lot in the previous verses, and now we'll see again. So when he's outside of everything, then he talks about citing a couple of verses
from the Brahma Samhita about Govinda, Ananda Chinmayarasa, Pratibhavita, this and so on. How he is in his internal potency of transcendental existence, and at the same time, Nirvishat Akilatma Bhuta enters into every atom of the creation. And then again he says here in the next one, who through his plenary portions is outside and similarly inside here. So now he refers to this, how the impersonalist cannot imagine or perceive the all-pervading Brahman, but also conclude there's no possibility of his personal form. Here is the mystery. He is all-pervading at the same time has his personal form. As I stated earlier in the purport, there's nothing but Sri Krishna, yet nothing is Sri Krishna, save and except his primordial personality. Nothing is different from Krishna, yet Krishna is different from everything. That's a mystery. But it can be understood. Premanjana Tarichabhu, and our eyes are. So this is the mystery of his transcendental knowledge. But this mystery is transcendental love of God, because in that sense, that in that way you can perceive. Prabhupada described rahasya as devotional service, although the word really means secret, difficult to understand, recondite, and so on. And so now here's the mystery. The mystery is transcendental love of God, and one who is surcharged with such transcendental love of God can, without difficulty, see the personality of Godhead in every atom and every movable or immovable object. And at the same time, he can see the personality of Godhead in his own abode, Goloka, enjoying eternal pastimes with his eternal associates, who are also expansions of his transcendental existence. That's the mystery, to see this vision. You look outside, and you see Krishna in every atom and every movable and non-movable being. You look in your heart, you see the Lord in Goloka Vrindavan, in his pastimes. It's the same Lord. So how does this happen? And this vision, again, is the real mystery of spiritual knowledge, as stated by the Lord in the beginning. Sarahasyam tarangam cha. This, together with his rahasyam, this mystery, and also tarangam, its different elements. This mystery is the most confidential part of the knowledge of the Supreme. And you can't get there by mental speculation. The mystery can be revealed to the process as recommended by Brahmaji in his Brahma Samhita and then Premanjana Sarita Bhakti. When your eyes, this word Anjana, Premanjana, Anjana literally means ointment, a kajal that's put in around or on the eyes. For example, we have Dhananjana. Huh? The spiritual master puts the ointment of Jnana on the eyes with a shalaka. Shalaka is a little medical instrument for putting medicine in eyes, like a little paddle. That's a Dhananjana. Here is Premanjana. When that ointment is on the eyes, the ointment of love is on the eyes, then you can see Shamasundar with his Achincha Guna Swarupa. You can see what the transcendental form. Right? Therefore, although he is present in every atom, The Supreme Personality of Godhead may not be visible to the dry speculators. Even though he's there, you don't see him. This was in the second one. The Lord is there everywhere, every minute. He's inside and out, and you cannot see what is there. All you see is something else on top of it. Still, the mystery is unfolded before the eyes of the pure devotee, because their eyes are anointed with love of God. And this love of God can be changed, obtained by the practice of devotional service. And the vision of a devotee has been purified by the process of devotional service. In other words, as the universal elements are both within and without, similarly the Lord's name, form, qualities, pastime, entourage, etc., as they are described in the revealed scriptures or as performed in the Vaikuntha Lokas, far, far beyond the material cosmic manifestation, are factually being telephized in the heart of the devotee. Here's another sense of within. Although the Lord is without, he's in Vaikuntha, really far away. He's also inside the heart of the devotee. And he says, televised. Prabhupada uses the example of television. The man with the poor fund of knowledge can understand, although by material science one can see the things far away by means of television. Factually, the spiritually developed person is able to have the television of the kingdom of God always reflected within his heart. That is the mystery of knowledge of the personality of Godhead. So another thing inside, within, is this television. Now, Vijayamani has pointed out to me where this comes from. Here in this verse, we see the words in, you can't see in your screen, they're in red, maybe
a little bit red.
Teshu na teshu aham. I am in them, and I am not in them, literally. Now, this, open this up a little bit. Teshu na teshu is also read by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati as teshu na teshu. In other words, he takes teshu and puts the na together with the teshu. And the word na teshu is the locative plural of the word nata. And nata means bowed down or submitted. Thus the phrase means, I am in them who are submitted to me, as well as I am outside of them. In other words, they see me outside of them, and then they see me in their hearts. In other words, I am perceived both within and without. So this is, Prabhupada is taking this from this way that, you see, the Sanskrit, you can do these things. And so this is how Bhaktisiddhanta finds this meaning also in this verse of they are in me. And so Prabhupada takes that as that's where this comes from, where the inside the heart. Then he talks about this statement by Narada, I don't know where that comes from. Muktim dadati karhi chit smana bhakti yoga. He gives devotional service to anybody. He gives mukti to anybody, but not devotional service.
5.6.18.
Huh?
5.6.18.
5.6.18. That's in the Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada then describes this devotional service. Now, one has the real sense. It's quite clear that Prabhupada is describing the experience, his own experience. She's talking about realized knowledge, she's also speaking from realized knowledge. This transcendental devotional service of the Lord is so wonderful that the occupation keeps the deserving devotee always wrapped in psychological activities without deviation from the absolute truth. It is just to completely absorb all the time, mentally, being absorbed in Krishna through all his thinking, feeling, and willing. We talk about cycle, the activities of the mind, right? All of them. Thus, love of Godhead developed in the heart of the devotee is a great mystery. Brahmaji previously told Narada that the desires of Brahmaji are never unfulfilled because he is always absorbed in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Nor has any desire in his heart save, nor has he any desire in his heart save and except the transcendental service of the Lord. And this is the so everything he wants he gets, but everything he wants is Krishna. And so all his desires are fulfilled. See, all we really want is Krishna. But because of the reflection of Maya, our desires are directed toward other things which glitter as though they are satisfying and worthwhile and valuable. They are not. When the covering is away, then our actual desire that we have, not an artificial imposed desire, not something put on by the GBC or somebody, it's the real desire in our heart is for Krishna. And so Krishna first, he purifies us so our actual desires become active, experienced by us, and then he fulfills them. Better than we could imagine. Actually, far more than we can imagine. That's what he's saying here. And so as the Lord's desire is infallible because he is atyuta, similarly the desires of the devotees and the transcendental service of the Lord are all so atyuta, infallible. That is to say, they never go in vain. They are satisfied. So again, Prabhupada talks about how this is rare. Materialists can't understand it. As far as yoga goes, yoga perfection and devotional service is the highest of all and the most mysterious also, even more mysterious than the eight kinds of mystic perfections. And then, quoting the Bhagavad Gita, he picks a verse which says, Sarva Bhuyat Pramam Bhuya Srinuve Paramam Vachaha. Here again, for me, the most confident Sarva Bhuyat Pramam. Same word that is used first to these verses. Now he knows how Narada is supposed to expand these topics. It's to be noted here that the mystery of Bhakti Yoga, notice how many times the word mystery shows up in these purports. I started was going to mark them all, but I realized mystery of Bhakti Yoga was disclosed to Brahmaji by the Lord himself. Brahmaji explains the same mystery to Narada, Narada explained to Vyas, Vyas explained to Shukadev, and the same knowledge is coming down in the unalloyed chain of the civic succession. But the mystery is this vision, this direct perception. So it's not, the mystery is not some intellectual explanation, but ultimately it's the transmission of this direct perception, of this transcendent experience. If one is fortunate enough to have received the knowledge in transcendental disciplic succession, surely he will have the chance to understand the mystery of the Lord and that of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the sound incarnation of the Lord. Now I want to go back. I put this link in here. to these verses in the first chapter, first canto, third chapter. This is the last 44, and then the first verse of is 141, not 141. You'll see. Here's this verse here, right? Where Sutta Goswami explains, is explaining to the sages of Vaisheranya Forest that I was there when Shukadeva Goswami recited Bhagavatam, and here's the disciplic succession of Bhagavatam, and I heard him with rapt attention, and thus by his mercy I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. Now I shall try to make you hear the very same thing as I learned it from him and as I have realized it. So he said it, the two words that Prabhupada really concentrates on is nivishtaha, being perfectly attentive, and yata, yata aditam, yata matihi, as far as my, as I have realized it. Huh? So Prabhupada's purport, now this is the mystery of Bhagavatam, one can certainly see directly. Here's the word direct. The presence of Lord Sri Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam. If one has heard it from a self-realized soul like Shukadeva Goswami, not again from those who are not qualified, the higher, he talks about the higher reciters who are not following regular principles. One has to follow from the right person, who's hear from the right person who is actually a devotee of Bhagavatam, following principles. That is the secret of learning Bhagavatam. Here's the word secret again. One has to learn Bhagavatam from the representative of Shukadeva Goswami and no one else, if one at all wants to see Lord Krishna in the pages. Says it again. In the pages. Huh? That is the process and there is no alternative. Sutta Goswami is a bona fide representative of Shukadeva Goswami because he wants to present the message which he received from the great learned Brahmana. Shukadeva Goswami presented Bhagavatam as he heard it from his great father, and so all Sutta Goswami is presenting Bhagavatam as he had heard it from Shukadeva Goswami. Right, there's the succession. Then he says, simple hearing is not all. One must realize the text with proper attention. The word navishta, it's up there, rapt attention, means that Sutta Goswami drank the juice of Bhagavatam through his ears. There was like a really super thirsty man at the end of an exhausting athletic event, takes down the Gatorade, drinks it with such eagerness. Right? Like that. You really want to be good. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person, and then he can at once realize, again, third time, the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. So one who has been the real hearer then is qualified to become the next speaker. The secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. Again, the secret, huh? And then he has this interesting, no one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. Because if the mind is disturbed with so many desires and distractions and is uncontrolled, you cannot give that not just focused attention, but very intense attention. So one has to be pure in mind. How can we be pure in mind? Well, no one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. What does it mean to be pure in action? No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. And in other words, even the most basic animal activities of life have to be done in a pure way. Then you are able to hear with rapt attention. and if one does that with, from the right person, then, as he says, somehow or another, someone hears with rapt attention from the right person. At the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Krishna in person in the pages of Bhagavatam. So this is the mystery, just as Krishna and Krishna's name are the same. So Bhagavatam is like a big name for Krishna, in a way, and it's the same process, so that Krishna appears directly. This is the mystery of Bhagavatam. I want to go a little further, because you can see here, Prabhupada in some ways continues in the purport to the next chapter, where Shonaka then congratulates Sutta Goswami and addresses him, because when he expressed his desire, he expressed his desire to present Bhagavatam, exactly as he heard it from Shukadeva Goswami and also realized it personally. So now Prabhupada discusses a little more what this word realization entails and what some of its signs are. Personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's own learning by trying to surpass the previous acharyas. This is not academics. Academics, you have to do that. You have to come up with some new idea that nobody has gotten. And even your own teacher, you have to show how they're wrong and you're better. If you just agree with somebody, you're finished. Everybody's trying, although truth is one, supposedly truth is one, and it's the same, everybody actually has to come up with a novel idea. You can see why it's a mess. But here, you must have full confidence in the previous acharya. So here we're talking about conformity, right? Something that's unchanged. But here's the other part. And at the same time, he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstance in a suitable manner. In other words, when the audience is different, the circumstances are different, and you can present it in a way that it's alive. And it may, in certain ways, be quite different, because it's in a suitable way for the particular audience and the circumstances. Yet, and Prabhupada has in italics, the original purpose of the text must be maintained. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it. Yet it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. This is called realization. So in realization, in other words, what happens is it comes into your heart. By realized knowledge, you make it your own. And then when it comes back again, it's unchanged, but it also has this stamp or the characteristics of the person who's speaking. If you look at how Bhaktisiddhanta wrote and how Prabhupada wrote, you can see the difference. Yet it's the same teaching. After you plow through Bhaktisiddhanta to figure out what he's saying, you realize you already know everything because Prabhupada has given it. But what a different way of speaking, because of different circumstances, different audiences. And that can be done. And when it's done in a realized way, there's communication and business is alive. So here, as we saw at the end of this text, Prabhupada says, the chance to understand the mystery of the Lord and that of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the sound incarnation of the Lord. So here we are in Bhagavatam, and he's referring here to the... Let's look at... if there's anything else. Okay, here's Prabhupada's translation. From the Chaitanya Charitamrita, as the material elements enter the bodies of all living beings and yet remain outside of them all, I exist within all material creations and yet am not within them. Again, he talks about the quality. This is a simpler commentary because he's already, this is written after the Bhagavatam. But he says here, the Lord is within it. Without his presence in the material world, the cosmic body could not develop. As just without the presence of the spirit within the physical body, the body could not develop. The entire cosmic manifestation develops and exists because the Supreme Personality of Godhead enters it as Paramatma, or the Supersoul. This is described later in Bhagavatam, the embryology of the cosmic person, cosmic body. The Personality of Godhead in his all-pervading feature of Paramatma enters every living entity from the biggest to the most minute. This is the text says this. His existence can be realized by one who has the single qualification of submissiveness. Again, that's Bhaktisiddhanta's reading of those lines that we showed you. Mateshu meant nata, in those who are nata, or submissive, and who thereby becomes a surrendered soul. The development of submissiveness is the cause of proportionate spiritual realization. The more surrendered, bowed down one becomes, the more one, the proportionate spiritual realization by which one can ultimately meet the Supreme Lord in person as a man meets another man face to face. Now, Prabhupada talks about a little bit, just here, some little striking phrase. Because of his development of transcendental attachment for the Supreme Lord, a surrendered soul feels the presence of his beloved everywhere. And all his senses are engaged in the loving service of the Lord. And now here, talking about his eyes are seeing, engaged in seeing the beautiful couple Sri Radha and Krishna seated on a decorated throne beneath a desire tree in the transcendental land of Vrindavan. This is internal vision in the heart. His nose is engaged in hearing the spiritual aroma of the lotus feet of the Lord. Similarly, his ears are engaged in hearing messages from Vaikuntha. That's very nice. And his hands embrace the lotus feet of the Lord and his associates. Thus the Lord is manifest to a pure devotee from within and without. This is one of the mysteries of the devotional relationship, in which a devotee and the Lord are bound by a tie of spontaneous love. To achieve this love should be the goal of life for every living being, which leads to the next text. Any questions about this particular text?
Question about this. What it means to be pure in fearing?
Defending. This is another way of probably eating, sleep, mating, defending. And so when it's the same thing, and defending yourself. And so even now, pure in defending. Well, pure in defending is that you the defending process. Well, Prabhupada actually says that the instinct of self-preservation is also a reflection of love of God, by the way. Because we want to preserve and protect the self. Everybody instinctively wants to do that. But of course, we think the self is the body. So we try to preserve and protect the body. But that actually the self is the spirit soul. And with the realization of the spirit soul, to become understanding who the real Atma is, the soul of all souls, is Krishna. So this protecting the self is really love of God. Within the reflection. So when we are pure and defending, it is love of God. That may be manifest in the spiritual and in the material world, where we try to defend the interests of Krishna, we defend the Sankirtan movement, we defend the devotees. Prabhupada's instructed like that. that we ourselves, when we are in some harmful situation, we should depend on Krishna to take care of it. But if we see that some devotee is being in danger, we do everything to defend the devotee. There's this famous incident at one program in India. I forgot where or when it was, but it was a Mayavadi and Pandal program to which Prabhupada had been invited, and he had come with his disciples, and the audience was kind of hostile. And I think that when he tried to talk, he had trouble talking. So he had a kirtan, and the devotees were dancing on the platform in kirtan, and people started to attack the devotees and try to grab them. And Prabhupada had cartels on a string like this, you know? And he went, it's starting to hit these people. That's pure English, isn't it? So if there's any necessity for any defending activity, it's at the cost of the Lord. Okay? Yeah?
Krishna Prabhupada's use of the word mystery.
Yeah.
And it's also a term that's used in other, or in world religions.
Yeah, of course.
Such as Christianity.
Yeah, they do. Were you here yesterday? Okay, well, just give me a second. I'll show you the final authority in the English language. It says about this word. It's coming up now, I think. Why is it taking so long? There it is. It's a HTM file, it's slow. This is from the Oxford English Dictionary. So they mention, the root word is this classical Greek, mysterion. Mysterion, I can read Greek. You're a Greek in college. I still don't remember how to read it. Where it was these Greek certain secret religious ceremonies which were allowed to be witnessed only by the initiated. And we discussed this, that people were actually, there was a process of being initiated into the ceremony, some ritual where they were tested and being qualified and admitting to these secret rites. And that's the... Then it has a sense of secret purpose or counsel. In the New Testament, the meaning sometimes of a religious truth long kept secret but now revealed through Christ to His church. And we have a similar sense like that in the Bhagavad Gita, where these things are confidential in the Vedas, but now I'm telling them to you openly. This is so hard to understand. So they come to say, a religious truth known only from divine revelation, a doctrine of the faith involving difficulties which human reason is incapable of solving. And then here, a sacramental rite of the Christian religion, the Eucharist, where supposedly bread and wine is transformed into the body of God, Jesus anyway. And so that's called a mystery also. And other usages are there. It has that use. And I'm sure Prabhupada is aware of these different usages, including the classical one. Because in the 19th century, people were still steeped in the classics. The Roman classics they met in those days. Okay? Anything else? Yeah?
When it's mentioned on this spiritual television, there's a...
Spiritual?
Television. One.
Huh?
Television.
Oh, television.
And there's a mention that you want to stay in one place can see the spiritual world.
In the heart.
And the question is about, actually, about the distance, like we was talking about the time. Spiritual world.
Uh-huh.
But what is actually, if we touch upon the distance, what is
right.
Since in this spiritual.
Well, the television example is a little inadequate, because in the television, you know, there's the original person in the studio, the television presenter, say, and then a reflection or an image and screens everywhere. But in the case of Krishna, he's present. So the devotee who sees the Lord in the heart is actually, by that very fact, also in the spiritual world. And so he has an existence, a double existence, at this stage of development of Krishna consciousness, of being in the world in one body, the sadhaka deha, and being in the spiritual world in another body, the siddha deha. That's what happens. That's the...
There's no question of traveling.
No question of traveling. Travel is instantaneous. And so Prabhupada's remark that Vaishnava at this stage doesn't see the super soul in the heart. He doesn't see a Vishnu form. He sees Krishna and Radha and everything instead. Yeah, there's no question of travel. That's just different. That's for the purposes of narration. Anyway, he was still searching in a way. Okay, anything else? Okay, let's take a break and then we'll do the next one.